Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Federalist Files. On today's show, we're going to be going over Federalist number 83. It is titled The Judiciary Continued in Relation to Trial by Jury, written by Alexander Hamilton, July 5th, 1788. Topics include legislature has power to modify courts as long as it coincides with the Constitution. Argument of juries in civil cases, an argument in favor of jury in criminal cases. So this was something that was in heavy contention at the time, I guess, in these constitutional debates, whether or not to have a jury for civil cases. Now criminal cases is unequivocal. Everyone was pretty much in a consensus agreement in criminal cases having a jury. But in terms of a civil cases having a jury, it's kind of convoluted. It's a little weird because each individual jurisdiction has its own laws in terms of, you know, let's say property laws or how to build, things of that nature. So states are kind of different on that front, and because of that, because of the complexity as well of tort laws and battery laws, things like that are related to civil cases, because civil liability cases are they're not as simple and as clear-cut as a criminal case. So Hamilton didn't fully disavow a jury in these civil cases, but rather says we'll just leave it up to the states to do so. And this is the longest paper that I read. It was something like, I mean, it was long. But it starts off, Hamilton in this paper, he cites the objection to the Constitution in terms of the condemnation in respect to trial by jury in civil cases. Now, he states his dissenter's argument here. He states, and I quote, "The mere silence of the Constitution in regards to civil causes is represented as an abolition of the trial by jury, and the declamations to which it has afforded a pretext are artfully calculated to induce a persuasion that this pretended abolition is complete and universal, extending not only to every species of civil, but even to criminal causes," end quote. So Hamilton, he objects that just because a provision doesn't exist doesn't mean that it's completely abolished. Now, in terms of criminal causes, there is a provision in the Constitution that shall be a trial by jury, that is the law of the land. But in terms of criminal civil cases, they say nothing in the Constitution, but that still leaves the power to the states to determine whether or not they're going to have a trial by jury for civil liability cases. So Hamilton, he cites the maxims of the Anti-Federalists, and I quote, "The expression of one thing is the exclusion of the other," that's their reasoning. "Hence say they, as the Constitution has established the trial by jury in criminal cases and is silent in respect to civil, this silence is an implied prohibition of trial by jury in regard to the latter," end quote. So pretty much just saying, because the Constitution doesn't say anything about civil cases, that means that it's an abolition of civil cases by jury, which is just not true, which is not stated in the Constitution. You leave that power to the states. That's what federalism is all about. So he goes on, he states, and I quote, "With regard to civil causes, subtleties almost too contemptible for refutation have been employed to countenance the surmise that a thing which is not provided for is entirely abolished. Every man of discernment must at once perceive the wide difference between silence and abolition. But as the inventors of this fallacy have attempted to support it by certain legal maxims of interpretation, which they have perverted from their true meaning, it may not be wholly useless to explore the ground they have taken," end quote. So he's pretty much lining up and characterizing his opponent's argument. He says, okay, well, we're gonna debunk it right now. So he goes on, he states, next, and I quote, "The maxims on which they rely are of this nature," and he's quoting them, "A specification of particulars is an exclusion of generals. The expression of one thing is the exclusion of another. Hence say they, as the Constitution has established the trial by jury in criminal cases and is silent in respect to civil, this silence is an implied prohibition of the trial by jury in regard to the latter," end quote. So yeah, he's just pretty much lining up his dissenters' argument, saying just because there's nothing written into the Constitution doesn't mean that it cannot be done. It just means that we don't think it's the sole power of the Union to put into law some sort of civil case jury in all jurisdictions. That's kind of up to the state authorities. So Hamilton contends that the legislature has the power to constitute courts. Thus, the legislature would be able to adopt a provision for juries and to construct the mode of trial in civil cases if need be. So he asserts, and I quote, "A power to constitute courts is a power to prescribe the mode of trial, and consequently, if nothing was said in the Constitution on the subject of juries, the legislature would be at liberty either to adopt that institution or to let it alone. This discretion is in regard to criminal causes is abridged by the express injunction of trial by jury in all such cases. But it is, of course, left at large in relation to civil causes, there being a total silence on this head." So yeah, he makes a point to point out that criminal cases will have a trial by jury that's written directly into the Constitution, but civil cases, we can either move on that later by a constitutional amendment through the federal legislature, we can leave it alone and let the states kind of determine it as they see fit. So he goes on next, he states, and I quote, "The plan of the convention declares that the power of Congress, or in other words, of the national legislature, shall extend to certain enumerated cases. The specification of particulars evidently excludes all pretension to a general legislative authority, because an affirmative grant of special powers would be absurd as well as useless if a general authority was intended." End quote. So once again, He's just alluding to how the national legislature has a specific set of powers that are written into the Constitution. Anything that is outside of the scope of those powers, he's calling it, would be absurd and useless if that general authority was not intended. So if the national legislature were to say, we're going to have a jury in civil cases, it wouldn't even really be legitimate because that power originally isn't given to them in the Constitution to determine that. Which I think is very interesting that he says that. So next he goes on, he states, and I quote, "From these observations, it must appear unquestionably true. The trial by jury is in no case abolished by the proposed Constitution, and it is equally true that in those controversies between individuals in which the great body of the people are likely to be interested, that institution will remain precisely in the same situation in which it is placed by the state constitutions, and will be in no degree altered or influenced by the adoption of the plan under consideration. The foundation of this assertion is that the national judiciary will have no cognizance of them, and of course they will remain determinable as heretofore by the state courts only and in the manner which the state constitutions and laws prescribe." End quote. So you know what I think it is that he's saying is you can't even give the federal legislative body the power to determine in these individual states because they just don't have the power to do so if civil courts will have juries or will not in certain cases. Because then it gets to the point where it's really weird where you got to pick and choose and the federal legislative body kind of becomes like the arbitrator or the arbiter of truth and how this is to be done and how this should be prescribed by the state constitutions. And he just, once again, he states strongly that this should be prescribed to state constitutions, state courts, and the laws that are of those state legislative bodies. So Hamilton argues by using examples, it cannot be concluded that juries in all civil cases cause a persistence of liberty, but he can feasibly discern the connection of liberty in relation to juries in criminal cases. So really he continues because what's going on right now is you have his objectors and the objectors of the Constitution are convoluting, they're confounding the principle of a trial by jury in criminal cases, and they're kind of pushing it over to the civil cases. They're saying, oh, since you guys don't believe in trial by jury in civil cases, then that means you must not believe in it in the criminal cases either. But it's all written into the Constitution, and it's just a dishonest argument, I think, that they're trying to make. So Hamilton, he argues by using those examples, he states, and I quote, I cannot readily discern the inseparable connection between the existence of liberty and the trial by jury in civil cases. Arbitrary impeachments, arbitrary methods of prosecuting pretended offenses, and arbitrary punishments upon arbitrary convictions have ever appeared to me to be the great engines of judicial despotism. And these have all relation to criminal proceedings, end quote. So he's saying, yeah, when there is an attack on liberty, as you know, the liberals will call it justice. They always use the word. It's like their special buzzword, justice, over and over again. In terms of liberty, attacks on liberty and freedom, they always come from these criminal cases. They don't ever really come from civil cases. And in those civil cases where there is some sort of liberty that is at stake, that can be done on a discretionary level, whether or not you want the criminal cases to have a jury, the civil cases to have a jury or not. So Hamilton notes that trial by jury in criminal cases and habeas corpus are both provided for in the most ample manner in the plan of the proposed Constitution. Hamilton argues in civil cases, officials may serve their own purpose by packing the juries in their own interest, compromising, corrupting the bench. Hamilton alludes to the difficulty of gaining jurors of good character rather than a judge selected by the government for their rectitude and their integrity. So he states, and I quote, "It is not difficult to see that it would be in the power of those officers to select jurors who would serve the purpose of the party as well as the corrupted bench. In the next place, it may fairly be supposed that there would be less difficulty in gaining some of the jurors promiscuously taken from the public mass than in gaining men who had been chosen by the government for their probity and good character." So yeah, I guess he's just kind of talking about how criminal cases, how we're going to choose from the people themselves. It's going to be representative of the people rather than some sort of government bureaucrat. Because if we had government bureaucrats determining that were laid out in these criminal cases, it would be a total disaster and all of us would be in prison right now. So Hamilton cites that both a court and jury at a double security, which preserves the purity of both institutions. States, and I quote, "But making every deduction for these considerations, the trial by jury must still be a valuable check upon corruption. It greatly multiplies the impediments to its success. As matters now stand, it would be necessary to corrupt both court and jury, for where the jury have gone evidently wrong, the court will generally grant a new trial, and it would be in most cases of little use to practice upon the jury unless the court could be likewise gained. Here then is a double security." Yes, so this is actually just like how the Constitution is written, with the decentralization of power. In this case, the decentralization of the judiciary power in criminal cases goes to, you have the judge and then you have the jury. Most likely the judge isn't going to want to get somebody out of trouble unless if they actually see a good reason for a retrial, whereas the jury does want to get somebody out of trouble if the government is trying to, you know, impede on their freedom, right? So Hamilton next asserts, and I quote, I admit it is in most cases under proper regulation an excellent method of determining questions of property, and that on this account alone it would be entitled to a constitutional provision in its favor if it were possible to fix the limits within which it ought to be comprehended," end quote. So yes, he's talking about property, he's talking about civil cases, and that there a constitutional provision alone to fix the limits of this power would kind of be, it would be hard to really comprehend it, because like I said, civil suits are so complex, and I think that's what he's kind of trying to allude to here. And he's saying that we should allow a comprehensive program much more on the local level rather than have the federal government do so. So Hamilton fears that this system of jurors in civil cases works in certain cases, but because of lack of uniformity in each state, there is greater reality of the obstacles which prevent the insertion of a provision. So he states, and I quote, "There is, however, in all cases, great difficulty in this, and men not blinded by enthusiasm must be sensible that in a federal government, which is a composition of societies whose ideas and institutions in relation to the matter materially vary from each other, that difficulty must not be little augmented." So yes, you're going to have different laws in each individual, you know, in terms of property value, things with farming. I mean, there's so many different laws. It's the code is very deep within these local and state jurisdictions. How is it that you're going to have civil cases that are trial by jury? Because they're just everything will just be inconsistent, right? For every single civil case. So, Hamilton claims. Let me see if I can find where I was now. I kind of lost myself. Hamilton claims that there is no general rule that could be fixed upon the uniformity to correspond with these circumstances in all these individual states. Hamilton finds the trial by jury in certain cases, civil cases, ineligible. He cites in cases that concern public peace with foreign nations. He talks about juries cannot be competent enough to investigate international laws of nations. They can be rendered insufficient by other influences because of this. So he states, and I quote, "I feel a deep and deliberate conviction that there are many cases in which the trial by jury is an ineligible one. I think it so particularly in cases which concern the public peace with foreign nations, that is, in most cases where the question turns wholly on the laws of nations of this nature, among others, are all prize causes. Juries cannot be supposed competent to investigations that require a thorough knowledge of the laws and usages of nations." End quote. Yeah, so if, imagine if you have a civil civil case jury when it came to laws of foreign nations. I mean, it would be a total disaster, which is why you would rather just have a judge preside on the case. So next he states, and I quote, "They," and he's talking about civil cases, "require often such long, deliberate, and critical investigation as would be impracticable to men called from their occupations and obliged to decide before they were permitted in return to them." Yeah, so people aren't going to specialize, like whatever your job is now, you don't specialize in civil law or criminal law, which is kind of the reason why you are not the jury in these civil cases. Hamilton asserts next, and I quote, "In short, the more it is considered, the more arduous will appear the task of fashioning a provision in such a form as not to express too little to answer the purpose or too much to be advisable." End quote. So yes, he says because it's so convoluted, and this gets back to the point that he was making, it's hard to make some sort of particular provision for this because it's so different in individual states, and people just are too ignorant to know those civil laws. So it's hard for them to make a federal statute stating we're going to have jury in these civil cases in these specific ones, but then we're not going to have them in these because then it's kind of hard because then the federal government becomes a little bit too overbearing or it doesn't it's too broad of a statement. So they'd rather just keep the whole thing up to interpretation and let it be handled on the local level. So, in conclusion, Hamilton calls for the power of states to construct their civil court systems as they see fit, and if they want civil cases to have juries, they may instill that provision themselves. So he states next, and I quote, "Even in far the greatest proportion of civil cases and those in which the great body of the community is interested, that mode of trial will remain in its full force, as established in the state constitutions, untouched and unaffected by the plan of the convention, that it is no case abolished by that plan, and that there are great, if not insurmountable, difficulties in the way of making any precise and proper provision for it in a constitution for the United States." End quote. Yeah, so we're gonna leave this to the states. We're gonna leave it to the local jurisdictions, and it's not really that difficult if we want to make a provision in the Constitution if we ha if need be. So he cites that there is no provision in the proposed plan that disables states from conducting civil cases with juries or the legislature from passing some sort of uniform law in relation to civil cases. So Hamilton, he acknowledges that there are civil cases where a jury would be fruitful, but it is too complex of a nature to create a provision that turned out to not fit all the states in cases of uniformity. And that would just be the worst. I mean, that would be a great failing of government where you would have a law that only applies to certain states and then doesn't apply to other states because then you would kill the equal protections clause as well and what have you. I mean, even though the equal protections clause in the Constitution, I think, was after, I'm pretty sure that was like the 14th Amendment, I want to say. So that's technically after the Constitution was written. Okay, so his very last quote he states to kind of close it out here states, and I quote, "The truth is that the general genius of a government is all that can be substantially relied upon for permanent effects. Particular provisions, though not altogether useless, have far less virtue and efficacy than are commonly ascribed to them, and the want of them will never be with men of sound discernment. A decisive objection to any plan which exhibits the leading characters of a good government, it certainly sounds not a little harsh and extraordinary to affirm that there is no security for liberty in the Constitution which expressly establishes the trial by jury in criminal cases, because it does not do so in civil also." So, wow. So this is actually a really good closing that he puts up here. If you want a good, the genius of good government, he says, is it's relied upon permanent effects. So if you look at our Constitution, right, if you look at all the different provisions, if you really look over the years, I think we have something like 28 amendments. And the Constitution has stood pretty strong relative to how long we've been around. We've been around for about 250 years. Our government's pretty tyrannical in some ways, in some aspects. There's obviously right now attacks on some of these amendments, the Bill of Rights, and specifically. But if you think about it, 250 years, really for 200, I'd say probably 200 years at least, it's almost been unimpeded in certain aspects. We continue to try to strive for even greater liberties on the conservative movement side, while the leftist liberals try to confiscate more liberties from us. So it's definitely a fight that we're having right now in our culture. But it is interesting that he says is, the most useful part of a government document, the genius of it, would be having lasting effects, having it be immutable. Or yes, immutable, where it cannot be changed, it cannot be influenced, it cannot, and to a certain extent, there's certain specific provisions that haven't been over time, and it's really hard to actually make it completely a immutable system, because man controls it, and man is fallible. Man screws everything. It seems like man screws everything up when you have something that is set in stone, that is so solid and so legitimate. That's why we call, I mean, the left, that's why they always call. They call for the abolishment of the Constitution. They think it's too, the left, and I was a left winger, in a lot of ways, right? So I would say stupid things, just like other, or middle, I guess you would call them middle leaner fence sitters, stupid things that the left would say. You would adopt them and say them, even though you've never read the Constitution before. You would say things like, "I think the Constitution's too old. We need a new governing document," even though you've never actually read the Constitution. The Constitution is very, very broad. It's short, it's not too long, it's not super specific, it's very general in a case, and the Constitution, for the most part, just lays out the organizational structure of the government. And then the Bill of Rights gives, certain rights to citizens, gives certain rights to state governments. I just think that's very interesting that people say that, and all it is it's the formation of government in the Constitution. So what is it specifically that you disagree with in the Constitution? If you ask the leftist that says they don't like the Constitution, they think we need a new one, ask them specifically what provisions it is, what articles they disagree with in the Constitution, and you will hear crickets. You will never hear a response at all, because they've actually never read it before. So, like I said, just to kind of wrap this whole thing up, Hamilton, he believed that this decision was best left in the hands of the state governments to legislate as they see fit in relation to juries and civil cases. And this paper now, this will conclude the judiciary. This one was extremely long. I think he made it really, he had to make a point to make it that long. I don't think he needed all, I don't think he needed to be that long. So next we have 84 and 85. Those are the last two. And those are kind of just like the miscellaneous ones. So we're going to be going over those. And then we're going to really be done. We're going to wrap up the Federalist Papers. And that'll conclude the Federalist Papers. We'll continue to do the current event podcasts, and then otherwise that'll be it until I see something that's kind of better to look into, And I also kind of wanted to give myself a break because over these last couple months, it's been a lot of work, folks. But I greatly appreciate everybody tuning in. As always, please like, share, subscribe, drop the mic, as in my name, Mike. Let people know about the podcast. And everyone have a great one. I will see you all next time. Thank you.